It's time for Success Profiles Radio with your host, Brian K. Wright. Have you ever wondered if there's more to life than you're currently living? Then Success Profiles Radio is the program for you. Every week, we'll explore different aspects of success and how to apply them to your life. Guests will come from many different backgrounds, including expertise in leadership, business, relationships, careers, networking, health, overcoming adversity, and much more. Every show is a dose of inspiration. This is Success Profiles Radio. And now, here's your host, Brian K. Wright.
Hello and welcome to Success Profiles Radio. I'm your host, Brian K. Wright, and it's an absolute pleasure to be with you here today. I'm honored that you chose to spend part of your day with me here, and this is going to be a fantastic and amazing show. I will be introducing my guest in a moment. I promise this is going to be a fun, informative hour. I do want to take a minute or two to share some things I've been learning and thinking about lately, and I usually do this every single week. Listening to audios in the morning has been a great way for me to stretch my mind and become a better version of myself, whether it's podcasts or books on Audible. And one thought that I heard recently that I thought would challenge me and perhaps a bunch of you is, what's stopping you from being a millionaire? Now, if that is a goal of yours, first ask yourself, how many customers do you need at your current price point to get there? If that number is daunting, you'll need to either 1, raise your prices, 2, generate more leads, 3, get better at sales, 4, hire help, or maybe all of the above. Even if being a millionaire isn't a goal, you do have a goal of some kind. So if you haven't achieved it yet, define what your blockages are and then decide how to address them. It will make a very big difference. And if you've not picked up my most recent book, it's called The Greatest Lessons I Learned From My Coach. It's on Amazon. It came out 2 or 3 weeks ago, and it's been selling well. So I'm very grateful for those of you that have picked it up. Please leave a review as well. I would highly appreciate that. And with all that in mind, I want to introduce my guest. His name is Eric Gall. Let me tell you about him. He has 25 years of experience in the M&A industry and has facilitated business transactions valued at a cumulative total of over $300 million. He's the founder of Edison Business Advisors, and he helps people buy and sell businesses, value their businesses, and prepare them for an exit. In the last 3 years alone, he has sold 33 businesses totaling $51 million and has earned an impressive 34 awards since 2010. He has earned the Business Brokers of Florida number one top dollar producer for the state of Florida, placing him first among 853 BBF intermediaries, as well as receiving the 2021 BBF Dealmaker Award. We have so much to talk about today, and it's been a few months since we've dived into this topic, so it's time to dive into it again. Here we are with my very special guest, Eric Gall. Eric, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for having me, Brian.
You're so welcome. So the first question I typically ask is, did you envision early on that you would be where you are today?
No, this was not the plan. The original plan was after I graduated from business school, I took a job at Ford Motor Company. And I thought, you know, 30 years at Ford Motor Company, I could retire comfortably and, you know, golf and fish and do whatever I enjoyed doing at the time. And here we are, you know, well over 30 years later, and I'm not retired.
No, for sure. I think those of us who are entrepreneurial at heart will always look for something to do because our mind is geared toward looking for opportunities and finding them. So what great lessons did you learn while working for Ford that has applied to now?
Well, I think the great thing about Ford is, you know, they are so much about process that, you know, that kind of mapping out every step of a process along the way that you need to achieve and measure milestones and, you know, provide feedback along the way of that process, you know, those key measurables and things of that nature. Just that discipline and the process, you know, is really, you know, one of the key lessons that I picked up from Ford.
Oh, for sure. Because if you're building cars, for example, there has to be a process, there has to be feedback because there are so many things that could go wrong and you're always looking to make your product better, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and it's, I came out of the engineering world, so I was a process engineer. So, you know, to me, mapping out exactly all the steps that you need to get to be, you know, to get to that point where you want to, you know, be is very important, and then measure yourself along the way to make sure you know, you're staying on track.
For sure. So what did your path look like prior to your current career after Ford?
Well, what I did was, you know, I grouped a few of us together who were at Ford together for a while that worked in various capacities. And we decided we wanted to leave Ford and buy some businesses. So we purchased some businesses in Michigan. We purchased some businesses in Florida. I moved down here to Florida to operate some of those businesses. Then this thing called the Great Recession hit. And, you know, based on, you know, the revenues and the earnings of those businesses kind of dropping off along with the entire economy, there wasn't enough money to really satisfy all of us. So my partner started going back into corporate America. Mm-hmm. And, you know, my thought process was along the same lines. But my wife told me, hey, you know what? I love it here in Florida. I want to stay. So happy wife, happy life. I decided, yes, you know, we'll plant roots here and I'll figure out something to do. So as we packaged together, you know, the businesses that we owned and started to sell those off, it made sense for me just to do that for other people. So I started doing that in 2009. And then hooked on with a company out of Orlando area that was a business brokerage. And I worked for them for 5 years. And during that time, you know, as someone who's looking to grow and, you know, do more and more and more, you know, I got a little bit tired of the Main Street business transactions that they were focused on, and I wanted to go upscale into lower middle market, you know, more. Mm-hmm. So what I did is, you know, started my own firm back at the end of 2014. That's, you know, grown ever since. I started, you know, out with one partner up in Tampa. He since left. I now have seven people. And just this past week, we've opened up an office in the New York City area, you know, in addition to our Bonita Springs office here in Florida and our office in Columbus, Ohio.
That's absolutely fantastic. So what would you say is your big mission today?
Well, I think the mission is really to serve business owners, you know, to the best of our capabilities. You know, we want to make sure that their business is properly prepared for sale. The business brokerage community doesn't have the best reputation out there. You know, we're trying to change that. When I was at Ford Motor Company, I worked in the business office, and part of my job, in addition to doing post-merger integration of all the Ford brands at the time, I was also handed some, you know, businesses that were purchased during the internet bubble and asked to sell those. Mm-hmm. So I learned on at Ford how to package up a business so a private equity group, you know, would be interested with it, you know, one of your more sophisticated buyers, especially in the business brokerage world. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I learned early, you know, to prepare a professional package.
Right.
So, you know, that's made a huge difference in, you know, how we've gone about our business at Edison Business Advisors. We've made sure that we're representing that client to a potential buyer to the best of our abilities. So we go overboard in asking, you know, a lot more questions than other brokers, documenting a lot more than other brokers, and making sure that the buyer really understands what they're purchasing, you know, before they make that offer.
Absolutely. So as you started your business, what would you say was the greatest growing pain? What was your greatest learning moment as you were starting your business?
Well, you know, I don't know that there's really been any huge pains. You know, we've had ups and downs, of course, but they're more economic ups and downs. You know, for example, in 2022, you know, the most recent, you know, down was the hurricane.
Yeah.
So that impacted a ton of business owners, you know, so you just adjust. So, you know, we, you know, worked a little bit differently. You know, we focused more on, you know, those territories to the north. So we, you know, shifted our focus into, you know, the Ohio, Pennsylvania, New York markets during that time. You know, the other recent downturn really was with COVID. And, yeah, you know, with COVID, again, you know, we just kind of shifted our focus for a short period of time. And when PPP loans and EIDL loans came out, you know, we went back to, you know, our clients and asked if they needed any help in, you know, securing that money. And we assisted them with that. And I also worked with many other business owners, I think of 22 in total that weren't clients at the time, you know, but just reaching out to them and asking if they needed help. And we assisted them with, you know, their applications. So, you know, just building that goodwill with clients, you know, in some of the downturns has worked out really well for us. And, you know, during the upturns, obviously, you know, there's nothing really to be concerned about.
That's fantastic. I love that you added that as a service component, because it keeps you in front of them. It helps you, helps them to know that you are willing to help, and perhaps they'll use you again as a result of that goodwill. I love that. So we've got about 2 minutes or so to our first break. And here's a question I love asking. What do you think is the most expensive mistake you have ever made? It can be financial. It doesn't have to be. It can be something that you held onto for too long or something that you didn't start soon enough. But what do you think is the most expensive mistake you have ever made?
Well, I mean, that's hard to say. I guess, you know, if you're going to say what's the most expensive mistake, it's probably, you know, at times, you know, just kind of letting go of, you know, the situations where, you know, a seller kind of goes around you to sell a business or doesn't pay you according to a contract. And you look at the dollar amounts and you go, oh, should I legally go after them? And it's like, I just don't have the time or the energy or the effort, you know. And sometimes that, you know, you look back and you go, okay, well, that was a decent chunk of change you just kind of left off on the table.
Right.
Should have gone after. But, you know, I can honestly say since I came into this business, it's been pretty darn good for me.
Yeah.
You know, and I think it definitely goes back to really focusing in on the process, executing the process, doing the things, the little things the right way, to make sure that business owner is, you know, represented appropriately in the marketplace. So buyers, you know, are attracted to the business.
Fantastic. We're coming up against our first break. My very special guest is Eric Gall, and we will come back after the break. We're talking about buying and selling businesses, evaluating your business properly, and everything along with that. We'll be right back.
The mission is to motivate and inspire others to discover their unique talents and follow their dreams in life. This is Success Profiles Radio.
It's words you never heard.
If you're like me, sometimes you have trouble choosing between being a couch potato or going out. Hey, it's a big decision for us scabberlatchers. A scabberlatcher or a ragabash is another word for a lazy person. Well, a couple from California seems to have solved the problem by inventing a motorized sofa. You may think they're just spinning their wheels, but people have spotted the couple cruising down the street on their drivable Davenport in West Los Angeles and Santa Monica. No word yet on the couple's identity, but a man claiming to be a relative said it's all well within the norm for his fun-loving cousin. I don't know if this Chesterfield on wheels is street legal, but either way, I think the police would have to put up quite a chase before they could coach him.
It's words you never heard.
I'm Carolyn Davidson, and you can have fun challenging your words you never heard vocabulary with my free app, Too Funny for Words.
Have you ever thought about writing a book? Surveys show that 81% of people wish they could, but many never do. If you're one of those people, I can tell you why. You don't think you have time, you may not know how, or you might not believe you are a good enough writer. When you're working with an experienced coach, these reasons go away because I will help you every step of the way. If you want to know more about how to write a nonfiction book, whether it's business, self-help, or how-to, reach out to me at www.briankwright.com for more information. Once again, that's briankwright.com.
Welcome back to Success Profiles Radio. So many people live their lives wanting more than they currently have. And this show will clearly demonstrate the principles, if I can do it, you can do it. So let's get back to the show. This is Success Profiles Radio. And here again is your host, Brian K. Wright.
we are back. This is Success Profiles Radio. My very special guest this week is Eric Gall, and we are talking about buying and selling businesses, learning to value them properly, getting out of our businesses if that's something we desire to do someday. And if you've not downloaded and subscribed to Success Profiles Radio on Apple Podcasts or iTunes, please do that. Leave a review. That would mean a lot to me. You can also hear the show on Spotify. You can ask Alexa or Siri to play Success Profiles Radio, and you will hear the most recent episode. And when this episode gets published, it'll be this one. So that is awesome. So, Eric, let me next ask you, what do you think is the highest value skill anyone can develop?
Well, you know, in my business, it's definitely financial acumen, right? So it's understanding how to read profit and loss statements, balance sheets, being able to dig through, you know, general ledgers. You know, it's the ability to kind of spot trends through time, you know, when you look at the financial statements and, you know, ask the right questions to the business owner to find out, you know, what they're truly putting in their pocket.
Yeah, for sure. I totally understand that. So your business is called Edison Financial Advisors. Tell us about that.
Well, you know, I needed to come up with a name. And, you know, down here in Southwest Florida, it used to be the winter home of Thomas Edison and Henry Ford. And they have the Edison Ford Estates that are down downtown Fort Myers. And, you know, one of the things I thought about, too, was that, hey, you know, if I ever grow to be like a nationwide group or something of that nature, you know, the Edison name, I don't know if you're aware of it, but there's like an Edison Avenue or Edison Street on in almost every major city in the country. Mm-hmm. And that came out of, you know, the initial power plants that were built to support electricity for the cities were all put on Edison Avenues. So, you know, the thought process there was that, you know, Edison's a good name. It's nationally known, nationally recognized. There's, you know, Edison, there's an Edison street name in every town. So yep, that one makes sense. So pick that and then, you know, we started out, we called it Edison Avenue, then changed it to Edison Business Advisors when we decided to add some additional services and we focused on, you know, in addition to buying and selling businesses, you know, adding certified valuation analysts and certified exit planners.
Perfect. Edison Business Advisors. And you have a website.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be?
Edison. And then B for business, A for advisors.com. So I just shortened up the last two words and, you know, made it simple.
Fantastic. How difficult was it for you to learn this business? Because there's probably a lot more to go into it than we might think.
Well, you know, I have, I've got a MBA. So I did it in general management. So I took quite a few finance courses. And accounting courses. So, you know, that background in finance and accounting helped. But I was in general management. I also enjoyed marketing. So I took quite a few marketing courses. And of course, you know, I'm trying to market businesses to sell them. So, you know, kind of just those skills, you know, are important. But I think the most important skill, you know, in my business is really that, I'll just say it's the ability to relate to a business owner.
Yeah.
Right. Cause they're going to entrust me to sell their business. Now their business is usually something that they've spent 10, 20, 30, sometimes even 40 years, you know, growing, you know, to create their nest egg for retirement.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's probably, you know, no more important transaction that they're going to do in their lifetime than sell their business for a lot of folks.
Absolutely.
So having bought and sold businesses myself, you know, for myself, you know, I think I have the ability to empathize with their situation, understand it better, understand their goals, needs, you know, be able to ask them, you know, better questions, you know, than someone, let's say, who decided to get into this industry just because they thought they could make some money. So they paid a franchisor to have a territory.
Yeah.
So I think that makes a huge difference.
Fantastic. So let's talk about selling your business first. We'll talk about buying a business later. What is the process like when you want to try and sell your business? I mean, you have to have some things in place first, right? I mean, I can't just come to you and say, I want to sell my business. You're going to ask me a bunch of questions. So what do you like to see from me if I want to sell my business? And what does that whole process look like?
Well, you know, the first thing I'm going to ask you for is financial history.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I like to see 3 to 5 years of tax returns and or financial statements. I'm going to want to know about your premises. So, you know, do you own a building or do you lease a building? You know, where do you operate? Right. And I'm going to want to know, you know, what assets are included in the sale. Now there's, you know, dozens of other little questions that come along after that, but that really starts the process because I need to put a value on your business. Because the first thing any seller is going to ask me is how much you think my business is worth.
Right.
Right. So yeah, that's how the process starts. You know, it's a combination of assets and goodwill, assets being that from that asset list. And then the goodwill being, you know, that cash flow that your business is generating and the quality of the lease are kind of your big things that, you know, impact that.
So a lot of people think of assets as the physical building. What other things do you include? I would suppose if there are any intellectual properties or trademarks, I would imagine the systems in place, the number of employees that you might have. What do you see as assets in a business?
Well, you know, the assets will vary from business to business. Like if you're a machine shop, it's the machine tools.
Mm-hmm.
Those are your primary assets and they're very mm-hmm. expensive. You know, if you're a plumber, you know, your assets are your vans and the equipment in your vans. You know, if you're, you know, a restaurant, it's chairs, tables, and kitchen equipment. So, you know, it all depends on what type of business you have. You know, your asset list can vary greatly and the value of your assets can vary greatly. If
Absolutely,
let's say,
yeah.
Let's say you're an e-commerce business, you know, it's basically your website URL and, you know, some relationships, you know, that's it.
Yeah, absolutely. I get that. Having intellectual property, though, strengthens the value of your business, though, right?
Yeah, it certainly does. It's hard for me to value it. You know, I always tell people when they say, hey, I've got all this intellectual property or protection or whatever. And it's like, that's great. But you know what that does? It generates cash flow.
Yeah.
Right? And that cash flow is for the most part, you know, everything's got to be, you know, fit in a box. That cash flow has got to support, first of all, you know, a fair wage for the buyer in a small business. It's got to support a fair wage for that buyer, you know, to compensate them for their time and effort to run the business.
Yeah.
If there's any debt service related to the business, it has to support the payment of that debt. And then third, it needs to, you know, provide a healthy return on investment, you know, for the business owner, you know, on their down payment or, you know, even the full price of the business if they buy it outright.
For sure. Is it hard, and I know this depends on the industry, is it hard to find comparable sales, like in real estate, for example, is it hard to find comps in order to value properly what my business could look like?
For the vast majority of businesses, it isn't, because I have subscriptions to pretty much every database, you know, out there, you know, starting with our Florida business, you know, Business Brokers of Florida database, you know, which has historical sales in Florida through our association. There's peer comps, biz comps, you know, I have access to those databases. And then what used to be Pratt Stats, it's now called BVR, Business Value Resources, their database as well. So all that, you know, between, you know, those four sets of data, I can generally find, you know, six or more, you know, similar type, similar size businesses, you know, to compare, you know, pretty much any business to.
Yeah. Having systems and a team in place, I'm sure, helps a lot because the business owner doesn't want to buy a job.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. You know, and as a former process engineer, you know, having documented processes and procedures, you know, I think is very beneficial for the new owner. It gives them, you know, a great deal of comfort coming into the business because, you know, they know if there's something they don't understand, they can just pick up the book.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So when should someone consider selling their business? I can think of retirement or maybe they found a different business opportunity, but what are some of the most common reasons why people want to sell their business?
Well, first and foremost is retirement, mm-hmm. which is a great reason to sell your business. You know, you're just ready to kick back and relax and enjoy life, obviously. Mm-hmm. The second most common reason is, you know, health issues, you know, so you just don't have the strength and stamina, you know, to go in on a day-to-day business and keep the business performing, you know, at its peak. Mm-hmm. You know, there are tons of other ones too, and they're generally, you know, the bad ones. I think it's the 5 D's. What is it? Death, disabled, divorce. I mean, there's a bunch of other ones as well that, you know, are not the optimal ways to, you know, exit your business, but, you know, they're also part of life. You have mm-hmm. to deal with them.
Yeah. And I would imagine your business would be valued more if your business is on an uptick rather than I'm looking for a lifeline. I have to get out, right?
Absolutely. Without question. Yes. You know, if your business is on an upward trend, it definitely is going to be far more attractive to buyers and they are going to look at it as less risky. And they're going to look at, you know, potential greater returns in the future. So less risk, greater returns, greater value.
Absolutely. We are coming up against our next break. My very special guest is Eric Gull, and we are talking about buying and selling businesses. We've been talking about selling businesses, and we're going to talk more about buying businesses a little bit later in the show. We're also going to talk about what we can do to make our business worth more if we decide that we're going to sell it someday. What can we do now to be proactive to make our business more valuable? We'll talk about all that and more when we come back. This is Success Profiles Radio.
The mission is to motivate and inspire others to discover their unique talents and follow their dreams in life. This is Success Profiles Radio.
Have you ever thought about writing a book? Surveys show that 81% of people wish they could, but many never do. If you're one of those people, I can tell you why. You don't think you have time, you may not know how, or you might not believe you are a good enough writer. When you're working with an experienced coach, these reasons go away because I will help you every step of the way. If you want to know more about how to write a nonfiction book, whether it's business, self-help, or how-to, reach out to me at www.briankwright.com for more information. Once again, that's briankwright.com.
If you are in business, what is the number one thing that stops revenue growth? Not having enough leads. Data is the new gold rush. With PhoneSites, that is never an issue. You can generate as many leads as you want without paying a lead broker. With PhoneSites, you can build a website or sales funnel from your mobile device in 5 minutes or less without any technical skills or without downloading an app. It's easy and you have nothing to lose. Try it for free for 14 days at phonesites.com/Brian. Once again, that's phonesites.com/Brian.
Welcome back to Success Profiles Radio. So many people live their lives wanting more than they currently have. And this show will clearly demonstrate the principles, if I can do it, you can do it. So let's get back to the show. This is Success Profiles Radio. And here again is your host, Brian K. Wright.
And we are back. This is Success Profiles Radio. My very special guest this week is Eric Gall. We're talking about buying and selling businesses and learning how to value your business properly and even what you can do to make your business more valuable before you're ready to sell. If you have not subscribed to Ultimate Achievers Magazine, go ahead and do that. The April issue is coming out very, very shortly. It'll be this week. So you can go to ultimateachieversmagazine.com and you can subscribe, pick your subscription option, and you will have access to every single issue we've done since December 2017. So issue number 72 is coming up. So Eric, let me ask, we've talked about how to get comps for valuing your business, but how do we discover how much our business is actually worth? I mean, for example, on Shark Tank, they talk about paying a multiple of your income or your revenue or even a multiple of your profits. How do you discover how much your business actually is worth?
Well, there's really only one way to figure that out, and that is to go to market with it and have, you know, the buying community, you know, make offers and tell you what it's worth. But we can do a pretty good job of estimating what those offers will be. And, you know, it goes back to what I mentioned, you know, early on, and that is, you know, a buyer is going to have three goals in place. That first goal is they want to, you know, compensate themselves, you know, for their time and effort in running the business. They're going to want to pay down their debt service if they leverage the business acquisition. And then third, they're going to want, you know, an adequate return on investment in whatever money that they place, you know, down as a down payment to purchase the business. You know, all that's got a box. And, you know, we test every business to make sure that it does box, you know, those kind of historical, you know, sets of ROI numbers and bank related tests that, you know, an SBA lender would run just to make sure that we're not overpricing.
Absolutely. So when sellers want to value their business, what kinds of things do they typically want? Are they always interested in better money or are they interested in better terms?
Well, you know, that's always a trade-off, right?
Yeah.
Because there are tax advantages sometimes to taking the money, you know, over time versus taking it all up front. So it just depends on the specific seller situation. You know, I've had sellers who are 80 years old and, you know, they're, you know, not going to wait around for, you know, 10 years for a seller to pay them.
Right.
You know, they want their money right away. And then I've had people who are younger and they look at it and they go, okay, I can defer some taxes or, you know, avoid some taxes. Yeah, this sounds like a great plan. I'll take a seller note. But, you know, it's really situation dependent. And, you know, we're always happy to work with the seller's CPA or tax advisor to advise them on what the best terms are for the sale. But generally what you see is if a buyer offers terms and a seller accepts them, they generally, I think historically it's been right around, you know, 14-15% increase in the price.
Oh, okay. Terms increase the price. That's wonderful to know. So what can we do? Let's just say that we want to sell our business in 3 to 5 years. What can we do to make our business more valuable now so that we don't have to scramble at the end to figure out what should I have done?
Well, the most important thing people can do is just keep very, very clear financial records. And I'm going to say clear and not clean, because I know small business owners well enough to know that there are tax advantages to being a small business owner. So at times, small business owners will hide specific, you know, expenses into their business that are, we'll call them discretionary. Mm-hmm. And, you know, those types of expenses, buyers will understand those. Mm-hmm. And they will credit for them if they're well documented.
Mm.
They're not well documented and they can't be proven, you know. What I tell people is that, you know, buyers are not going to trust you.
Right.
They're going to feel, you know, a little bit nervous about spending their money on your business. So, you know, the more you can do to show them that, hey, this is, you know, an honest report and, you know, it's well documented and you had given it thought, you know, ahead of time, you know, you can build those bridges of trust.
And don't run your stuff through your personal accounts. Don't commingle things. That makes things a lot harder to navigate, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, go ahead.
So, you know, I'll tell people, you know, you can pay for your health insurance. You can pay for your life insurance through the business. You know, you can even pay, you know, for some of your personal gasoline through the business, you know, but when you start, you know, making mortgage payments, you start, you know, making, education payments for your kids' tuition, you're going a little bit too far at that point.
Yeah, for sure. So what do you think are some of the biggest mistakes people make when trying to sell their business?
You know, just not being properly prepared, right? So it starts with those financial statements. You know, there's a lot of other things that you can do too. One of the things that you see quite a bit is customer concentration, you know, where one customer make up 50% of the revenue. Sometimes I've seen it even 80% of the revenue.
Oh,
right.
Yeah, and that's bad.
It's risky, you know, yeah. So buyer buys it, you know, who's to say that client of theirs, you know, won't go to another, you know, service provider.
Right. For sure. For sure. That's fantastic. So let's talk about how to buy a business. What if somebody wants to do this with little or no money out of pocket? Are there ways for that to happen?
Well, that's an interesting concept because, you know, I think during the COVID bubble, there were a lot of people for, I don't know, you know, I'll just name a price, $79.99, you know, you can learn how to buy a business with no money down.
Uh-huh.
All these little training sessions popped up, and I have yet to see anybody buy a business without, you know, a significant amount of cash to put towards the deal. You know what, you know, it doesn't necessarily have to be their own. There are ways for people, you know, the colleges have been teaching a lot of courses on entrepreneurship through acquisition and, you know, teaching students how to go out and raise capital.
Mm-hmm.
They're not buying a business without capital.
Right.
You know, they're bringing someone's capital to the table. I mean, there's a lot of things to consider, right? Mm-hmm. You know, first and foremost, you know, an SBA lender is going to want the seller or the buyer to have some level of skin in the game. So they generally require at least 10% down, right? Mm-hmm. So if you're buying a million-dollar business, that's $100,000. You're going to need that. Then you're going to need something to live off of, you know, for probably 3 to 6 months because a lot of times in these businesses, you're not buying the working capital. So the seller is keeping his accounts receivables and accounts payable. So you're going to have bills. You're going to have to pay employees. You're going to have to pay, you know, utilities. You're going to have to, you know, pay the rent. And, you know, during that time period, you don't have the accounts receivables coming in. You're waiting for them. You know, so now you take that million-dollar business, you may need another $50,000, you know, to pay your employees the rent and everything else until, you know, some of those receivables come in.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely.
So is it possible? I've yet to really see it. You do need some level of capital to purchase a business of any substance.
Yeah, and that makes a lot of sense. So if we were to talk about a business going through an acquisition, is preparing your business for sale different if you're looking to get acquired by another company versus looking for someone like myself who might want to buy a business?
Well, you know, I don't think the preparation changes much. I mean, the process is the process, right? Mm-hmm. You know, we do like a different level of, you know, confidential information memorandum for a private equity group type deal than we would for a financial buyer type deal. It's more in the graphics and depth of the content per se, but a lot of that is because your private equity type acquisitions are more sophisticated businesses. So there's more information to provide. Whereas, you know, your more Main Street businesses, you know, there's less information to provide. You know, in, let's say, a machine shop, you know, I might have, you know, 12 pages just on the equipment.
Yeah.
I'm going to have, you know, they have 100 employees. I'm going to have, you know, 3 or 4 pages on the employees. On a pest control business, you know, that's, you know, three men and 3 trucks and an owner, yeah. You know, you're going to have, you know, a small page of equipment, half a page probably of equipment. You're going to have, you know, a half a page on the employee situation.
Yeah.
You know, and the sophistication of, you know, detail that's required by a private equity group, when you know what they're going to ask for, you know, yeah. it's a lot more in depth. So you're going to do a little bit more.
Yeah.
But you base that on the business.
Right. Exactly. So we've got less than 2 minutes to our final break, and we'll carry this next topic over to the next segment. But let's talk about buying a business. How can we know if buying a business is a good idea versus starting one?
Well, I would say almost always that buying a business is a better idea than starting one, because, you know, you're walking into, you know, much quicker cash flow, yeah. And you're walking into a proven concept, right? Because if you're starting one, you have no idea whether or not you'll be successful. And I can't remember the percentages of businesses that are going to be still active after 5 years from a startup perspective, but I think it's like 20%.
Yeah, sounds and right.
I got to believe it's going to be over 80%, you know, if you went out and bought a business.
Yeah, no, I certainly understand that, because you're buying systems, you're buying the expertise. Maybe the owner will stay with you to train you for a short bit of time. It should be turnkey. You hope it's turnkey when you're buying an existing business, for sure. We are coming up against our final break. I cannot believe how quickly this is going. And when we come back, we will talk about what are some of the most common reasons why entrepreneurs buy a business, what stops people from buying a business, and we'll talk about how to get funding, you know, whether Eric's company helps people get funding or whether he makes connections to people. But certainly, funding is a huge component in this, and we will talk about all of that and so much more when we come back. Down the Stretch We Come when we return. This is Success Profiles Radio.
Is to motivate and inspire others to discover their unique talents and follow their dreams in life. This is Success Profiles Radio.
If you are in business, what is the number one thing that stops revenue growth? Not having enough leads. Data is the new gold rush. With phone sites, that is never an issue. You can generate as many leads as you want without paying a lead broker. With phone sites, you can build a website or sales funnel from your mobile device in 5 minutes or less without any technical skills or without downloading an app. It's easy, and you have nothing to lose. Try it for free for 14 days at phonesites.com/Brian. Once again, that's phonesites.com/Brian.
The court TV on these days, the court reporter profession has come front and center. My mother was a court reporter for Barron County, Wisconsin, and she used to say one of the hardest things about being a court reporter was refraining from cacination or snickering when lawyers said silly things. One attorney, while questioning a witness, asked, "Now, doctor, isn't it true that when a person dies in their sleep, they don't know about it until the next morning?" My mother said she liked working with the lawyers, otherwise known as snollygosters and pettifoggers. She would say that 99% of the attorneys give the other lawyers a bad name. What do you call a court reporter that has a tendency to overpunctuate? a kamikaze.
It's words you never heard.
I'm Carolyn Davidson, and Words You Never Heard has been brought to you by the Bariatric Surgery Center of Dallas.
Welcome back to Success Profiles Radio. So many people live their lives wanting more than they currently have. And this show will clearly demonstrate the principles, if I can do it, you can do it. So let's get back to the show. This is Success Profiles Radio. And here again is your host, Brian K. Wright.
And we're back. This is Success Profiles Radio. And if you have not downloaded and subscribed to Success Profiles Radio on iTunes or Apple Podcasts, please do that. Leave a review. That would mean a lot to me. So, Eric, this is our final segment. I would love to ask, what are some of the most common reasons why entrepreneurs buy a business?
Well, I think, you know, it's a lifestyle, right? It's, you know, kind of controlling your own destiny versus, you know, working for the man where they control your destiny, right?
Uh-huh.
You know, it's one of the reasons why I left Ford Motor Company. You know, after 17 years there, you know, there was a level of frustration setting in on just kind of the political, you know, turmoil inside of a large corporation like that. And, you know, at a certain point in time, it's like, geez, if I had the opportunity, I would just do things totally different. So yeah. Let's go out and make the opportunity.
Absolutely. What do you think stops people from doing this? Is it because it just feels too mysterious? Do you think they're afraid?
Well, you know, it's probably not an unfounded fear.
Right.
You know, having a paycheck every, you know, 2 weeks or every month, you know, is a pretty secure feeling. You know, when you go into the business ownership world, you get paid last.
Yeah.
I mean, you got employees to pay, bills to pay. You know, and when things are going good, it can be incredibly lucrative.
Yes.
And when things aren't going as good, you know, you can be waiting for a check.
Yes.
So, you know, you take a location like Southwest Florida. You know, when I first came down here, it was a lot more seasonal. And, you know, I did a few restaurants, and the restaurants did great in the winter. You know, when all the snowbirds were down here and vacationers were down here, you know, that's when they made their money. And then during the summer, you know, it was slim pickings.
Yeah.
So they would see, you know, fall offs of 50% in revenue, you know, from their high month, you know, to their low month.
Yeah.
So, you know, and you're trying to keep employees paid and happy and, you know, it's tough. So, you know, a lot of that, you know, risk, you know, you need to be able to accept and live with.
For sure. So if people don't have the money laying around to buy a business, do you connect people to funding, or do you actually help people get funding if they want to buy a business? How does that work?
Well, if they've got, you know, at least a small nest egg, you know, that, you know, it's worth working with them. You know, we can find something that fits. You know, if they've got a larger nest egg, we can, you know, again, find something that fits. So, you know, we just take a look at what their financial viability is, and then we kind of match them to what we think the right business is.
Sure. So would some of this funding include maybe SBA loans, private funding, borrowing from your 401k, cash value life insurance?
You know, we do a lot of SBA loans, mm-hmm. and, you know, the SBA rules of, you know, change, you know, frequently. But right now, I mean, they're doing the lenders are doing a lot of 90-10 loans. So that means you only need to come with 10% down.
Mm.
And in some instances, you know, they're even letting the seller fund, you know, that 10% with the seller note.
Oh, wow. That's 10%. It's not that bad.
But sellers don't like to do that. You know,
right. No, for sure. They want more of their money, or they want better terms than that, for sure. What right. do you think are some of the biggest mistakes new people make when trying to buy a business?
You know, it's mostly thinking that they can run anything. You know, I used to get a ton of people saying, hey, you know, I'd like to buy a restaurant, you know, in Southwest Florida. And I would say, okay, great. You know, tell me about your restaurant experience. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I worked as a waiter back in college. It's
yeah.
like, you know, I'm watching, you know, one out of five restaurants fail down here every year. And these are owned and operated by experienced restaurateurs. And here you are that have, you know, someone with no restaurant experience, and you think you're going to come down here and compete with them.
Right.
And they're like, oh, I didn't think about that.
Yeah. Well, just because you're a good chef doesn't mean you're a good business owner.
Yep, that's true too. You know, sometimes, you know, sometimes we have people, you know, that, you know, just, you know, you have to tell them now, you know, you're just not going to, you know, be successful.
Absolutely. Let's hear, you know, one or two of your favorite case studies of clients that you've worked with and what they started with and how they end up working with you successfully.
Okay. Well, we want to talk on the buy side.
Sure. We can start there.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, we can talk really small. I mean, one of the first clients I had, he came to me and he said, Eric, I want to find something in the septic, you know, cleaning industry. And I'm like, really? he's like, yeah, you know, I did that, you know, for a time in college, and you know, it's a good business and you make good money. It's dirty work, you know, not something that I want to get my hands into. But I know if I hired someone in to do it and, you know, just manage that business, I could make good money.
Yeah.
So, I mean, literally, this was probably about my fifth or sixth deal. And I said, okay, well, let's look around. And I eventually found him a septic business that was for sale. And, you know, he had just enough money for the down payment, and he had just enough, you know, to survive on because his wife was a banker. So she was making some money.
Yes.
And, you know, he purchased it, and he's still running it. And that was, I think, 2010, I think he bought it. So, what are we, 14 years later, he's still running a septic business.
That's absolutely fantastic.
He's grown a little bit. I think, you know, he's purchased probably his third truck. It was just a one truck business. So.
Oh, good. Evidence of growth. That's always very exciting.
Yep.
For sure. How about an example of someone on the sell side?
Oh, there's tons of those, because I tend to work more on the sell side. Just sellers bring you buyers.
Yeah.
Right? But I do a fair amount of buy side work. But the sell side work, you know, we just did one. I'll give you a more recent one. It was just a couple years ago, and it was two dentists, and they came to me through their CPA, and their CPA recommended that they talk to me, and they had an offer on the table from Heartland Dental, and it was for $4.7 million for their practice. And I took a look at their financials and I said, you do not want to sell it to Heartland Dental. We're going to package this up and we're going to put it on the market, and I think I can get you a lot more money.
Oh, good.
And they said, okay, well, what are we going to price it at? And I said, we're not going to. We're going to let the market dictate the price, because I honestly think that we're going to get lots of offers.
Yeah.
And they said, okay. So we packaged it up. And I took it to market, and we had, you know, quite a few offers, and we ended up accepting one where the doctors thought the philosophy aligned with their philosophy in running, you know, a practice, and the price tag on it was $7.4 million.
Wow.
So we definitely, I definitely earned.
Sure did.
You know, and they were incredibly happy. Yeah, you know, and at the same time, I got another listing for another dental practice. It was six offices.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, we ended up selling that one for $7.2
million. Wow. That also goes to show that you shouldn't take the first offer that's given to you, because if someone's just making you an offer out of the blue, chances are they're trying to lowball it a little bit, and maybe you might want to see if there is something better. So I love that story. That was awesome.
Yeah, that's definitely the case, because if someone comes to you just out of the blue and says, hey, I want to purchase your business, and you say, okay, yeah, you know, make an offer, you know, they know that they're the only game in town. They know they're not competing against anybody. And if you're not competing against anybody, why would you make your best offer?
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. So as we talk about the way you operate your business globally, what are the top core values that you run things by?
Well, you know, the first core tenet is really just be honest with, you know, buyers and sellers. You know, I always, you know, especially like in pricing, you know, I'll get sellers and, you know, they'll tell me what they think their business is worth and I'll come back with another number and they'll say, oh, gee, well, you know, I was hoping it'd be worth a lot more. I don't think I can sell it now.
Yeah.
And, you know, I always say that I'd rather disappoint you today and excite you tomorrow than excite you today and disappoint you tomorrow.
Oh, for sure.
Because at the end of the day, I got to sell your business.
Yes.
You know, and if I don't think it's sellable at a price that you want, I'm going to tell you, I don't want to waste my time or yours.
Right. That makes a lot of sense. I love that so much. What has surprised you the most about entrepreneurship?
Probably the amount of time. You know, I work a lot harder than I ever worked at Ford Motor Company. I never thought that would be possible. But, you know, I definitely, you know, work longer hours. But, you know, I do find time to have fun, too, and family time and things of that nature. It's just a lot more difficult to get away when you're the captain of the ship. Right.
For sure. For sure. We've got under 2 minutes until the end. How do you know what to say yes or no to?
Well, you know, you got to do your analysis, right? Mm-hmm. And then once you do your analysis, like I said, you know, you got to be honest with, you know, the buyer or the seller. And, you know, a lot of times the seller will try to persuade you into their line of thinking. Yep. You know, so, you know, the one asset that I have that I can't ever replace is time.
Yeah.
So I always have to look back and say, if this is going to be a waste of my time, a waste of a buyer's time, a waste of a seller's time, we just got to cut the cord.
Yep. Absolutely.
And I see so many times, you know, where I cut the cord with a seller and I see it listed by another, you know, broker at, you know, a ridiculous price that I told them I wouldn't list it at, you know, and I will see it there, you know, 6 months later, a year later, year and a half later, it's still for sale. I'll call the seller and say, hey, you want to list it at my price now? You know, and they never do because they never want to admit they're wrong.
Exactly. So one more time, we got 15 seconds till the end. Where can we find you?
Yeah, Eric All, Edison Business Advisors, www.edisonba.com. And, you know, phone number, my cell follows me everywhere, 239-738-6227.
Fantastic. Eric, thank you for being here. And thanks to all of you for listening. This has been Success Profiles Radio. Join us every Monday at 6 p.m. Eastern, where I interview another world-class achiever, learn what they did, what they overcame, and the lessons we can learn along the way. Take care, everyone. Goodbye.
Thank you for being a part of Success Profiles Radio with your host, Brian K. Wright. Each week, we'll explore different aspects of success and how to apply them to your life. We'll have guests that will come from many different backgrounds, including expertise in leadership, business, relationships, careers, networking, health, overcoming adversity, and much more. For more on Brian and the show, check out his website, BrianKWright.com. If you've ever wondered if there's more to life than you're currently living, then Success Profiles Radio is the program for you. Join us again next week for more Success Profiles Radio with your host, Brian K. Wright.